This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Rainbow Report on the media. As we get ready here at Joy for our annual membership and fundraising drive, the Radiothon, the media landscape is undergoing a period of rapid change. Old media, by which I mean printed newspapers and magazines, broadcast television and radio, are all struggling to find and keep an audience. Increasingly, people don't buy newspapers and magazines, they read them online. They don't wait for TV shows to appear in the schedules, they download them over the net. Thankfully, as we're a radio station here, radio seems so far to have been the medium that's weathering the storm the best, but that doesn't mean we're immune from the impact of our new technology. And we'll be talking to our IT guru here at Joy, Nick Bassett, all about that. Meanwhile, new media are appearing that exist only online, and we're going to take a look at a couple of them. Katrina Fox describes herself, and I quote from her Facebook page, as a high femme lipstick lesbian who loves golden age Hollywood, drag queen glamour, disco music, big platform heels and fabulous sparkly frocks, who's also a radical vegan and passionate animal rights activist, and she also does stand-up comedy when the mood takes her. But she's joining us today as the editor-in-chief of the online magazine The Scavenger, always assuming her plane from Sydney gets in on time. Misha Ketchell most recently worked as a researcher and producer on ABC TV's Media Watch. Before that, he was editor of Crikey and Big Issue Australia and a reporter from The Age. So he's covered the spectrum of old media and new, you can fairly say. He's now the managing editor of The Conversation, which is, quote, an independent source of information, analysis and commentary from the university and research sector, written by acknowledged experts and delivered direct to the public, unquote. And in case that puts you off, it's actually very readable. Giving me a hand in the studio today is Andrew Shaw, the editor of MCV, and Kath Pope, who has written extensively for both on and offline media, including the gay press. Can niche media such as community press and radio survive this new era, or is it in fact the best of times to be small and focused? Seated next to me is Andrew Shaw from MCV, while since we've been together on the radio. How's things in gay media land?
They're fantastic, Doug. They're really good, and it's good to be back on the Rainbow Report and see you again and have a chat.
Now, you've got an extensive website.
Yes.
As well as a print edition. Where do you think you get most of your readers now?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, we still continue to print out the same number of copies that we've been printing out for the last few years. There hasn't been a decline in that. There does seem to still be a demand around Melbourne and Victoria for the printed product. We hear reports that MCV is often the, quote, take-home paper. As far as online, that's been going great guns ever since we got a dedicated online editor and a dedicated online salesperson. We needed really to get someone in with new skills who knew the digital domain, and we did that, and we've seen things going forward.
Yeah, because the online version of a paper cannot just be a reproduction of the printed one. It's a completely different beast in many respects, isn't it?
No, in some respects, the online version of MCV is trashier. It's more fun. It's certainly more up-to-date. It's certainly got all the gossipy stuff in there that poor old me working on the print perhaps doesn't have time to get up and cover. I like to think of myself as a serious quality journalist, and online is more fun. But of course, the print stuff ends up online as well eventually. But when you're working on a weekly print schedule, you can't drop everything every time something happens that you know needs to be reported on. You have to rely on your online stuff. So in effect, there is a double up, I suppose, within our organisation. You've got an online editor for each paper, and you've got a print editor for each paper as well.
Kath, you've worked, Kath Pope.
Yes.
You work for Census at the moment, but
yes,
you have also worked for MCV in the past.
Yep.
You in fact had Andrew's chair for a while.
Yes.
You've worked in both online and offline media. You heard Andrew there say that his online version was perhaps trashier. Would you say that it is a different beast when you write online? It's shorter sort of story is less, more lightweight?
Well, I think even calling it online media is only looking at one part of it now. So I run a large entertainment brand, but we call it, it's a digital brand, and digital means online, tablet, and mobile. Mm. So there's three different platforms, and obviously the mobile and the tablet content is really consumed through apps. So they expect a very different experience to just a traditional web browser, which is your online mm-hmm. content experience. And then, of course, old school print is a whole different world again. So we really have to, and then we have to look at the size of the screen and the user habits associated with those screens. So obviously, someone who's reading online on a monitor has a very different user expectation around someone else who's just reading on an iPhone or a tablet, which has a much smaller screen. So, you know, there's a number of layers. It's no longer just online and print now. It's really kind of fragmented to your choice of device that you prefer to consume media on.
Misha, I want to bring you in at this point. You are managing editor of this thing called The Conversation. And as I said, it sounds a little bit daunting when you say it's a newspaper written by academics. And it also seems in some respects to be flying in the face of what we've just heard about, you know, making online and tablet and phone media sort of shorter and punchier. You're doing what seems to be almost a contradiction in terms, which is trying to do a quality newspaper online.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, we think there's actually a gap in the market for that sort of content. Traditionally, you would have got it from the likes of, you know, the Financial Review or the Sydney Morning Herald or The Age or, you know, The Australian to some extent. You
know, I'm glad you put that qualifier in there.
These would be called sort of, you know, the heritage quality media outlets. Hmm. But their online offerings are very different. I mean, I noticed you were talking before about being slightly trashier online, and, you know, that's certainly the model that Fairfax has adopted. You'll notice that it's a lot more playful, there's a lot more celebrity stories, there's a lot more gossip. Now, the reason that big newspaper companies are doing that is because it works, is because we can now see something that we can never see before, which is what readers actually read. And it turns out they don't read necessarily always the long, earnest treatises. They sometimes like to read short, gossipy pieces of information. So that's what... a lot of the traditional media companies have done with their online offering. But what that means is that people that are interested in public debate, that are interested in sort of more considered, thoughtful, intelligent content, aren't necessarily being catered for. And so we think that there is a gap in the market. Now, we don't want to be, you know, boring and earnest and overly serious. I mean, obviously, we're also making an effort to make our copy accessible and sort of playful and energetic. But we do want to cover serious issues, and we do want to actually contribute to the quality of debate.
Now, just so that people know what the conversation is, you're backed by what I might call a consortium of universities, aren't you?
That's right. We have a number of founding partner universities, and also the CSIRO, that have all sort of contributed financially to establishing The Conversation. And The Conversation, really, the whole idea, it's basically based on the idea of a newsroom that is staffed by academics rather than journalists. So something big happens, like, you know, the Fukushima nuclear issue, and normally a traditional journalist would get on the phone, would try to find an expert, would call them up, would, you know, take down three or four lines in shorthand, would mangle it, would miss a bit of it, would put it in a news story, it would get cut out by the sub or cut in half. And that's sort of how experts were, you know, traditionally used by newspapers. Our model is we actually go straight to the expert and we say, okay, this big thing's happened. You've been working on nuclear energy for the past 20 years. You know more about it than anybody else in this country. We'd like you to tell us what's going on using your knowledge. And the journalistic skill comes in making sure that knowledge is sort of applicable and useful. So saying, okay, I'm an individual, I'm following this story, what do I want to know? Well, I want to know, you know, whether there's any risk. I want to know what's going to happen next. I want to know what this means for the nuclear industry in Australia. And it's getting academics to respond to those sorts of questions.
Andrew.
Misha, it's interesting you say that you're kind of cutting out the journalistic point of view, if you like, but how good would academics be at bringing the human story? You talk about Fukushima, for example, the tragedy there, would that tend to be left out as we're looking at, well, the radiation level is such and such and, you know, we expect 10% fatalities or whatever? What about the human stories?
Oh, I think they're absolutely, you know, important, but that's not something that we're necessarily setting ourselves up to do. We're setting ourselves up to do sort of explanatory journalism that sheds light on issues in the news. For example, there was a, you know, there's obviously been a big issue about the plain cigarette packaging and the campaign by the tobacco companies against the move to introduce plain packaging. Now, there's a very, very well-known academic at the University of Sydney called Simon Chapman who's campaigned on this issue for the past 30 years or more. I mean, I'm probably not accurate on precisely how long he's been doing this, but he's been a big campaigner for a long time. You know, in some work with Quit, they've actually done some work testing claims that have been made by the tobacco industry, that the tobacco industry have said there's no evidence that this would work. And Quit put out a report saying, actually, well, there is evidence this will work, and here is the evidence. So what we did was, you know, when that report comes out, we get Simon Chapman to write a piece for us. It's up within 2 hours. It's there before any of the other media. And rather than just letting that sort of comment, there is no evidence, just float around unquestioned, we say, okay, they're saying there's no evidence. Is there no evidence? And we're testing things that people are saying in the news.
You're not really after the angle of breaking news, are you, on the conversation?
Oh, no, we absolutely
are. I mean, you'll break an investigative report will certainly break news that's probably been worked on for some period of time, but you know, you're not reactionary in some ways. You're far more analytical.
Well, we're both. It's interesting that you say that, actually, because one of our one of the stories that we were happiest with was a series of stories we did on Osama bin Laden being shot. And basically, you know, within a couple of hours, I mean, we were there, we watched the Barack Obama press conference, and then within a couple of hours we had the first academic response. But you're right in that we're not like AAP or Newswire service. Yeah. We're not reporting the actual the news event itself unfolding, but we're providing immediate analysis and context. And, you know, we had a great piece by an academic, again, from the University of Sydney by the name of John Keane, who argued very strongly that he thought that what happened to bin Laden was an assassination and there was no other way of characterising it. And that became the important debate. It wasn't just what had happened, but what it meant in terms of international law, in terms of international diplomacy, in terms of the war on terror.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.